Good evening or good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Hoops HD. This is our Hoops HD report. Woo-hoo! I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined by David Griggs, John Salica, Joby Fortson, Rocco Miller from Racketeer.org, and the Hoops HD newsroom there. Is that where you're at?
Yes.
Hold on, Chad. I think 45. We need to go to the monitor and see what type of room that really is.
Yeah, let's go to the monitor. We're instituting video replay on the Hoops HD report.
All right, everybody rewind for a moment. We've got to do a monitor. Also, John Titel with us, by the way. Sorry, John, didn't mean to leave you out there. But we've got a lot to get to here. And let me start, before we go into standings and everything, there was a little bit of news today regarding the whole FBI investigation and all of that, that the NCAA has come out and, not the NCAA come out, the FBI has come out and issued subpoenas to both Sean Miller and Will Wade for testimony in the trials. And this is pretty interesting, and this could become, these are probably the two most high profile people that have been subpoenaed. Rocco, did you get a chance to look at that at all? And
yeah, I sure did. I'm really interested to see how it plays out. I mean, I think there's some time. I think the trial is April 22nd. So of course these guys have the ability to kick the can down the road. Of LSU in the midst of a big season, a clear tournament team, possibly protected seed. So it's hard to imagine anything getting affected until after the tournament's over, but obviously some big time term and short term ramifications coming. In Sean Miller's case, Titel could probably comment on this. Number one recruiting class coming in next year, and I'm sure that's why his name is that's why he still has his job. Let's just put it that way.
Titel, do you want to respond?
I don't, but I think that sounds accurate to me.
All right. On that, though, we will keep an eye on that, especially to get to the office of David. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is important. Oh, crap. What the hell happened? Hold on.
We got to go to the monitor.
Oh, yeah, okay. We got to go to the monitor. Well, we got to go to the monitor. Well, it is important to remember that Sean Miller denied the charges in the press conference. So I don't know why they're still investigating.
Javon Quinterly says hi.
Let's go to actual basketball. We can talk about this more during the offseason. I'm sure that we will, because that's when this is going to really come up.
Sean Miller is not having a good month. He's just – it's just some days just aren't your day.
Hey, they swept their weekend games against Stanford and Cal. But anyhow, let's go ahead. I'm going to pull up some standings here. I want to actually start with the new number one team in the nation, according to the AP and the coaches poll, not according to me personally, but the Gonzaga Bulldogs, off of Duke's loss last week, are now undefeated in the West Coast Conference, 27-2 overall, number one in the nation. And,
or as Chad likes to refer to them, a two seed.
No, I've now conceded that they should be the fourth number one seed. They'd probably be the fourth best team in the country. But Joby, let me start with you on them. You know, the Zags, let me ask that question. Are they really the number one team in the nation?
I think they're a Final Four contender. I think I'd have them exactly as you said, the fourth number one, behind the consensus number ones that I think are out there. Well, maybe the third, with Tennessee falling off. I don't know if Kentucky's caught them yet, but it's real close. Or Michigan State is also in the discussion. But they're very deserving of the plaudits. Polls are silly, because it's a slotting system that it's the last good team who hasn't lost. So, I mean, Virginia would be number one if they hadn't lost to Duke. Duke would be number one if they hadn't lost to Carolina. Zags are playing BYU, you know, and Pepperdine. That's the complaint that you would have. But it's also, should we be punishing them for the conference they play in too much if they're just ridiculously blowing out the spread constantly? There's a reason why the quantifiable metrics like KenPom has them as a two, the net has them as a one. You know, the predictive models have them up there. I don't have a problem with them being a one, because I don't have a problem with them being number one, because I don't have a problem with them being a one.
Well, they've got an interesting week ahead where their two games, the first one is should be a fairly easy game at Pacific, who is not very good. But then Titel, Saturday, they're at St. Mary's, who has suddenly become the second best team in this conference.
which is not saying a lot, but it's still something. It's nice. Keep in mind, the Gaels lost to Gonzaga by 48 just 2 weeks ago, so I do not expect the rematch to go that much better on Saturday. They have won four in a row, should be a 20-win team when they face each other on Saturday. They only start one senior, so the future is bright for St. Mary's. I want to reflect on the past real quick. They had a guy back in the 90s who played 97 games for them. He made a good career choice on Sunday as we saw him win his second Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor. He's now co-starred in two of the last three Best Picture Oscar winners in Moonlight and Green Book. That's right. Mahershala Ali used to play for St. Mary's.
There he is on the screen.
I did not know that. He's cheating either. He's great in Green Book.
Okay.
Well, One of the things that you have to look at, and it is kind of an indicator, is how badly Gonzaga has been beating teams that don't suck. Now, these aren't tournament caliber teams, but they're teams that, like, not many people would be able to go into, like, San Francisco, for instance, and win by double digits. Not many people would have been able to blow St. Mary's off of planet Earth. And they kind of remind me, and I know I just looked it up, and I was about to say the last team to blow through their conference and win every game by double digits was that Butler team that was the national runner-up to Duke. But I went and looked it up, and there was actually two games that Butler did not win by double digits. I think this West Coast Conference is better than what that Horizon League was, and I think Gonzaga is rolling over it more. And out of conference, they did beat Duke on a neutral floor. They beat them without two of their better players, They beat them without two contributing players, whereas Duke was at full strength. And they had the really close loss to Tennessee, and they had the loss at North Carolina. The same North Carolina that just beat one pretty big at Duke. I think they're pretty damn good. I think that the only team that's better than them is full strength Duke.
Well, I'll tell you what, before we go any further, David, I want to stick with you for a second. I meant to do this before we went into the standings. I screwed up. We'll have to go back to replay and redo
it. Oh, wait a minute.
We like to do blind resumes, and I made a little mistake and forgot to bring one up. But, David, I brought one up actually special for you this week. Show me the screen right here. David, I want you to take a look at this blind resume.
These are the two resumes. Could you scroll down, please?
Okay.
A little bit. I can't.
There we go. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, let me look at these pretty. I kind of like the one on the right. I mean, I think that's pretty good. And you have to look down here at quadrant four. Could you scroll down? These are the easiest games to win, and the team on the left just hasn't won as many of them. And if they can't do what's easy, then I don't see how you can value that more than the team on the right.
So you go with the team on the right. Sleek, you agree with it? The team on the right, the better resume?
I think it is, without question, the better resume. I picked these out myself. So
This isn't quite blind resumes for complete morons that we debuted a couple years ago, but this comes pretty close.
I got to say, though, David, one thing very similar. The team on the left in the blue on the win column has just about the same type of stuff that the team on the right has in the top column there on the right side in the loss column. So,
well, and you have to you also have to factor in that you don't want to lower your average NET ranking.
and there they are, the team on the left, the Duke Blue Devils. The team on the right, David, what the hell?
Well, no, I mean, that is a really good – and you have to keep in mind something that doesn't appear on the team sheet is who the coach is. It's Tim Miles, and the fact that they've been
I think we're done with blind resumes for the rest of the season after David just did that to us. But let's discuss the team that is on the left, which is a legitimate team there, the Duke Blue Devils. Let's go over to the ACC at this point. And, Sleeka, let me start with you with this Duke team. They did suffer the loss, bounced back, got the win at Syracuse with no Zion. Do you think there's serious cause for concern here or without Zion?
Chad, can I just say something real quick? Joe Lenardi is on my television, and it is on mute, and it is glorious.
Okay, David. Sleeka, would you like to contribute to the show, or should David just keep talking?
I know this is going to be a theme with the puppet later on, but I think he has a nice little habit of overlooking certain wins just because they took place prior to a certain injury. But Duke has clearly shown that they are going to be able to win games of significance without Zion, and they also
getting him back.
And I hear he is doubtful for tomorrow night's game, so he should be back very soon.
Yeah,
it's not an easy place to win. And Duke has lost there before a lot. The only team that loses in Castle that's highly rated more than Duke is Virginia.
Well, Joby, how about Virginia? They picked a real nice win over the weekend at
Louisville. I'll say this. This Louisville in the first half, it was a tale of two halves, but you could have seen this coming to a degree. Louisville hit 10 threes in the first half. They were unconscious. They were threes with hands and face. It looked like, to be very honest, RJ Barrett's performance against Virginia a few weeks earlier. And to cap it all off, Virginia closed it to 7 after being down 12, and then a half-court shot goes in. They're up 10, and the ball in the second half. But the untold story in that, how many regular two-point field goals did Louisville have in the first half?
I'm assuming you're about to tell
one.
Us. I really don't.
And guess what? That one trend, the three shooting cooled off to normalcy, and that one trend continued in the second half. Virginia ended up winning by 12, holding Louisville to 15 points in the second half, grinding the old dentist office cliche that's associated with Virginia, came into four. And I can honestly say there were some great performances like the Virginia Tech first Virginia Tech game, the Clemson game. There were a number of good performances. But this game showed, wow, you better watch out, because they walked into the Yum Center with a team firing on all cylinders, despite Louisville's struggles recently. All cylinders were going for Louisville. They withstood it, did it, won by double digits, going away on the road. Very impressive. That's what one seeds are made of as well.
Yeah.
All right. I want to grab you bringing Tytel in here, because you got Virginia on the left there, but the Tar Heels, off of the strength of that win at Duke, whether Duke was at full strength or not, really looking good at the moment as well.
They were looking terrible a month ago, a 21-point home loss to this Louisville team that has been as schizophrenic as anybody outside Syracuse. They've won 10 of 11 since then. They're only lost to a very good Virginia team. Huge week for them. Wins over Duke, albeit without Zion, and Florida State, each by 15-plus points. They're top 10 in the nation in both offensive and defensive adjusted efficiency. They're not doing it with a bunch of freshmen like Duke. Three seniors in the starting lineup. Everybody talks about Luke May. You cannot forget about Cameron Johnson shooting over 47% from behind the arc. A huge rematch coming up on March 9th at the Dean Dome with Duke. I don't know if there's going to be a bigger game to watch all season long. And, of course, the ACC tourney will be great. But is there a chance that Duke and North Carolina get slotted in the same regional, here's hoping for the East, and end up playing each other sometime in mid to late March?
I think it would require, you know, at least one of these teams to lose a game or two besides the head-to-head.
The other thing you would need is five protected seeds.
Yeah, you need Florida State and Louisville or whoever.
You're right.
The first four have to go in different regions.
You're right. So odds are, Tytel, I know you'd like to see it in D.C., but I have a feeling it's going to happen. It would have to happen in the Final Four bracketing rules. But
Minnesota.
Rocco, let me bring you in here kind of a little bit further down. What about teams like NC State and Clemson? Are these the bubble teams in the conference, and how are they looking right now?
Yeah, well, I think NC State is getting in off efficiency ratings for the most part alone. Their resume has a lot left to be desired. Not anything of note away from home for NC State. Clemson, probably just on the outside looking in. Right now I've got them my first team out, but I also don't have a bid thief in, and there's probably a potential of 3 to 4, even more bid thieves this year. So I think for teams to feel safe, including NC State, they got to get inside the top 40, and they both got work to do, and opportunity coming.
Right. Yep. Yeah. A big weekend coming up, David, where Clemson's going to be hosting Carolina, NC State's going to be at Florida State. For both those teams.
It is. And I mean, Clemson, back to doing what they do, losing games by a point. they're outside the bubble, but they're right on it. I agree with Rocco in that sense. And I mean, they do have a pathway in. The opportunities they need are there. So if they're good enough, like, they'll get in. I think Clemson, it's going to be fairly obvious by the time that we're done whether they belong in or not. Can you give me 30 seconds on Louisville here, Chad? Can you pull them up real quick?
Pull up their profile, sure.
Yeah. Because one of the things about Louisville was that no one was really projecting them into the tournament in the preseason. I don't think we had them in the preseason tournament. They were kind of a mess coming into the year. And when you look – and now it's kind of funny. In a situation to where we talk about how they're in a rut, they're blowing it, their fans are losing their minds, some of them already want to get rid of Chris Mack. Well, they're way ahead of schedule as far as this rebuilding project goes.
I honestly would still have Chris Mack on my list for Coach of the Year in the ACC, yeah, despite the blown losses, the blown games.
Right, because when you look at their losses, Virginia, one seed, Duke, one seed, Kentucky, one seed, Tennessee, two seed, North Carolina, two seed, Marquette is ranked 11th, Florida State, potential protected seed, lost at Florida State. I mean, that is some heavy, heavy, heavy lifting. And they haven't been getting blown out. And when you look at their wins, they still have a path to a protected seed. Now, I don't think they'll get it. But this is a team that is still way, way, way overperforming when you look at what their preseason expectations actually were. And anybody that thinks that he's not doing a good job there is too stupid to be a fan.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's keep things rolling here. I do want to mention a couple other games that are actually coming Tuesday night here. Two big ones, Duke at Va Tech, Syracuse at North Carolina as well. Although, you know, David, I know that you'll probably be watching something like Boston College at Georgia Tech on Sunday.
I will not be watching that. I am putting right now, I'm putting the parental lock on that game to make sure that I don't even accidentally turn it on.
I'll tell you what, though. Let's run over to the SEC. And we've been had a few jokes already at the top of the show about going to replay. And we saw a game, Rocco, let me bring you in here on this. We saw a game on Saturday between LSU and Tennessee where I think most of the second half of the game was spent watching the referees, watching the monitor. It was ridiculous. Dick Vitale was going off about it. It was crazy.
It was crazy. It was the epitome of what you guys have been tweeting about for 5 months, all in one happy last 5 minutes, and then a lot of overtime as well. That was painful, and it was refreshing. We had an announcing crew, you know, feeling the pain of the fan and expressing that along the way. But the game itself, I mean, wow, talk about a brutal way to lose. Tennessee loses on a foul call with less than a second to go on a loose ball. Not saying it was a bad call. It's just a really, really tough way to lose. And that knocked Tennessee off the one line in most bracket projections and in some cases all the way down to the almost bottom of the two line. So, you know, it's just a tough break for the Vols, but in this league, they will have more chances to redeem themselves.
Also a good chance for LSU to showcase that they weren't just a one-man show with Tremont Waters either.
That was amazing.
He was out for the game because of illness.
Yeah, and I know they were at home, but they still that is still a huge game to win without such a key player. You know, and like the refs, it was such a good game that you just want to go back and watch it again. But, it was outrageous, and we've complained about it all, I mean, for multiple years now. Now, the guideline or the standard is conclusive evidence. Well, if it's taking you a minute or 2 minutes or 3 minutes or in some cases more than that to make a decision, then isn't that by definition inconclusive? Like, if you're not sure, then isn't that inconclusive? So why is it – they actually said this during the game, and this is something we've been trumpeting. Why should replay take more than 60 seconds ever? If you're not sure after 60 seconds, then it's freaking inconclusive.
And I got to throw in here also that the whole idea – when they have these replays where the two officials look at it, they don't agree, and they have to bring the third one in to break the tie. Hello, if they don't agree that it is – you know, then you got to stay with the call because it is now not – indisputable visual evidence.
Right.
One of the two referees looking at it already disputes it. Let's keep things rolling here a little bit, though.
Let's go to the replay.
Okay, let's go to the replay. LSU got that win after losing at home earlier the week to a Florida team, and I know you want to discuss them. I've got them up here on the right side of the screen.
So the Gators were almost done earlier this month. Three straight double-digit losses, albeit three tourney caliber teams in Kentucky, Auburn, and Tennessee. They've really bounced back in a big way. Four wins in a row. A huge 5-point overtime win at LSU last Wednesday. They're doing this with three freshmen in the starting lineup, which makes it even more impressive. They should beat Vandy and Georgia to go 18-11. Then they get the home rematch with LSU, the regular season finale at Rupp Arena, neither of which will be easy, obviously. They've already been swept by Tennessee, but I'm trying to figure out how they can make it. So let's say they get a 7th seed in the SEC tourney. They beat 10th seed Arkansas, who they've already beaten in Fayetteville last month. They somehow upset LSU in the quarterfinals, which we've seen they can beat LSU. They lose to Kentucky in the semis. Is this Florida team getting in if that happens?
They're in, John, and this is – and, you know, I'm the biggest Florida skeptic on this entire panel, but they're in right now, and they're in by splitting their last two games, just beating Vandy, Georgia, and winning that Arkansas game. That's all they have to do because the bubble's so weak. With the at LSU, you know, as a hallmark, Ole Miss is in this tournament right now. Butler's on the bubble. Alabama's on the bubble. If you do that, that's better. And there is almost no bad. Losing to Angry Frank this year isn't really bad. That's a good resume. And that is actually safely, I dare say, even with that resume, they aren't even in the first four. I dare say that they are an 11-ish, 10-ish seed.
Where did you have them, Tytel? I know you just did a bracket yesterday, and you're the one that's guessing the committee. I remember you had them in. I just didn't remember how far in.
I have them as an 11, but I'm telling you, like, I'm glad to hear that Joby has a lot of confidence in them after hating them earlier this year. If they split with Vandy and Georgia, I don't think you should be that confident about it.
No, yeah, right. I think you're right. They have to win these two games. They have no option of winning these two.
Well, those are really bad teams. So, I mean, that's more holding serve than it is anything else.
And I might add, if you lose to one of those two teams, it's bad, but then you can make it up by being LSU at home. You got to win two of these final four. And then probably, and who knows? They might not even have to beat Arkansas. Who knows?
Well, I would certainly advise
them. Mention would be a big factor in that. But yeah.
Well, let's take a look at the upcoming schedule here, Sleek. Let me bring you in a couple of big games this week, including Wednesday night's Tennessee Ole Miss game, but even more importantly, Saturday Kentucky at Tennessee round two.
Those are a couple of important games, but you've also got a team like Alabama that's becoming more and more desperate. They have to go to South Carolina, who came off of a loss at Mississippi State, where they were unusually bad on defense for the final 30 minutes of that game. And then they're going to be hosting LSU on Saturday. So for the Tide, they're running out of chances, and they're going to have to cash in at least one of those games and probably need two to really feel safe themselves.
Anyway, let's jump over to another conference here. Let's go over to the Big 12, where as we record this right now, this evening, Iowa State is currently up 15 points at Oklahoma late in the second half, and Kansas State round two is going on. So we can't discuss those games directly. But Tytel, let me start off with you with this Iowa State team that we are watching play really well right now, but got swept by TCU now in the season also.
I'm one of the biggest believers in Hilton Magic, and I'm glad to see it's back tonight. But very weird team. 18-5 just 3 weeks ago. They looked like a protected seed. They lost at home to Baylor. They got swept by TCU. 14-point road win at Kansas State 2 weeks ago. Obviously, it saved their entire month. Huge win. They still have three big opportunities this regular season. The Oklahoma game going on now, and Texas Tech. They've already beaten each of them by single digits, so I believe in this team. The question, of course, how on earth did they lose to Arizona and Maui in November?
Well, I think that's back when we thought Arizona was going to be good, so didn't that count for something? Joby, what about this team on the right here that is losing to Iowa State right now?
Oklahoma
Sooners. What do we do with them? Every time we think they turn it around, they pull one of these.
You know, and I know that the committee, you know, people like, you know, some pundits have said, well, conference record doesn't matter. I think it does at some point. When it's awful, awful, it will start to matter. 5-10 is like that awful stretch. Oklahoma, luckily, out of conference, had a solid year. Wofford and Florida are nice wins. And then any win you're getting in the Big 12, even those tier two ones, Texas, TCU, and the Texas game, they were listing, and if they were a ship, and they righted it a little bit. Their season is all in front of them. Let's assume they lose tonight, then they got to beat West Virginia, but then they have to beat one of the Kansas schools. If they do that, and they can climb back to within four games of 500, they're in the ball game. Depending on, once again, Rocco's well-referenced bid-stealing conferences, but assume that doesn't happen. They're in right now because the bubble is so weak.
And well, they look like they'll be destined for a first round game of the Big 12. Obviously, they've got to win that game too in the Big 12 tournament.
Right, that's a very good point, Chad. That I was just about to.
But they're going to likely get in that Oklahoma State or West Virginia, because their record's so bad, they'll actually get a win.
Yeah,
and then they'll have another shot against a K-State or a Texas Tech, so there's a third chance for a big win also.
But their next two games are winnable. They really are, because West Virginia is bad and Kansas is bad in true road games. They've only won two of them, and one of them was not at West Virginia. And, you know, as close as it was on Saturday, I'm beginning to think that Kansas is not a good road team. But, I mean, if Oklahoma gets that, they're 7-11, and I know that that's historically low. But if they win that and they win that opening round game in the Big 12 tournament, I think that that gets them to 8-12 overall and that they are in. Because if you look at that profile, there's only one thing that's really, like, that you're really holding your nose about, and that's that loss at West Virginia. Everything else is pretty good. I mean,
yeah. And they'll be at 20 wins at that point, Dave, which I think psychologically is a big deal.
Okay. Yeah. I want to bring up this other team here on the left here. Rocco, let me bring them up with you, though. This Kansas team, and there's starting to be a debate, is this team a protected seed when you look at all that they did, especially in the non-conference, or they should be a 5 or 6 seed because of the way they've been playing since Azubuike's been out, especially with what happened in Texas Tech where they didn't even bother showing up this weekend?
Yeah, it's a great question, Chad. I think this is going to be highly discussed in the committee room wherever Kansas lands at the end of the day, because you've kind of got two different teams. They had outstanding results by beating Michigan State, Tennessee, and Marquette all away from home in neutral courts, but they have a 2-7 away record, and most of the damage was done with the current Kansas roster. And they continue to have shaky results. They got pounded by almost 30 points at Texas Tech over the weekend. You know, they still play pretty well at home, it looks like, but I think you know, for me, they've slipped down in the 4 seed range, and if they continue playing like this, they could fall a little bit further.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a winnable road game coming up at Oklahoma State this week this weekend, and if they can't win that one, I don't think they'll win another road game all season. I don't know that they're going to win at Oklahoma. Baylor at home, can't, even if they get this game tonight against K-State at home, I don't know that's going to be enough.
Right. I'm pretty sure, Chad, and I think we all agree, that if I had to guess, if they get that win at Oklahoma State, that the committee is going to give them a protected seed. because, I mean, but should they? And I don't think – I think the answer is no. We were just looking at their profile. It is amazing. And most of the amazing stuff on it happened before the Azubuike injury. They're not the same team. They're not a protected seeded team. And, like, when you look at a team like Florida State, who I know had to sweat out Notre Dame tonight, but Notre Dame's a playoff team. Remember, they were in the playoffs. So,
okay, that's it, David. I've got to move on now. You can't even figure out what sport we're discussing.
But do they beat Florida State on a neutral court? I don't think they do. I don't think they beat most protected.
Well, here is the upcoming schedule this week. As I mentioned, the games that are going on tonight, but big Texas at Baylor game coming up Wednesday night. And this weekend, we've got Texas Tech at TCU, Baylor at K-State, Iowa State at Texas. I mean, a lot of these games are really good games. Texas at Texas Tech next week.
It's not necessarily a good game, but an important one tomorrow night. TCU, awful on the road. They need to pick that low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, but then they got two really interesting home games after that with Texas Tech and K-State, and where they have been winning games. So I think it'll be an interesting next three games here for TCU as well. But let's try to keep things rolling here. Let's jump over to the Big East. And Tytel, let me go back to you on this conference where, you know, I thought that I saw somewhere a few weeks ago that Villanova was 9-0 in the conference, weren't they?
I believe they were 10-0, but
that was
a long time ago. The team has fallen apart, lost 4 of 5 since then, granted all on the road, so they get a little slack, but a huge home game coming up against Marquette on Wednesday. The number one seed in the Big East tourney is at stake, although it doesn't matter so much because the rest of the Big East sucks, so it's probably just going to be which team gets to wear white in the title game, Marquette or Villanova. But one factor is that if you're the 2 seed, that means that you might face a 3 seed in St. John's at the Garden versus a 4 seed, and God forbid Xavier makes the 4 seed in the Big East, which is almost impossible. So in that regard, I think I'd rather have the 1 seed, not that Xavier isn't hot, because they're hot too. And of course, much like with how did Iowa State lose to Arizona, how on earth did Villanova lose to Penn in December, for God's sake?
And let me throw this out there. Rocco, we do have this St. John's team who gives us three teams above 500 in the conference for a rare week. But you know, they lose to Providence. Then they bounce back with a real nice win over Seton Hall. I mean, what the hell's up with this team?
I feel like St. John's really struggles against teams with a big interior presence, which I think could spell big problems because they still have to play Xavier twice. And that's what they ran into both times they lost to Providence. I feel like Villanova and Marquette have smaller lineups and matched up very well against those teams. I've been talking to a few St. John's people about this very topic. So I'm starting to drink the Kool-Aid they're drinking. They've got some real nerves coming up against these two Xavier games ahead.
We got the best of both worlds in the St. John's Seton Hall game because the Johnnies jumped out big to a 26-5 lead in the first 8 minutes of that game and ended up having to sweat that one out because the Hall actually cut it to five with about 2 minutes left to play before they were finally able to close it out with a few Shamori Ponds layups.
Yeah, well, actually, let me stick with you. You are our Xavier guy, and we were talking a couple of weeks ago whether Xavier would win another game all season. And here they are on a four-game win streak, 15-13. Let me throw something hypothetically at you. Should they get these last three games, two of which are on the road, and a sweep of St. John's, are we suddenly putting your Musketeers on the bubble, if not in?
Let's put this into perspective for a moment. 2 weeks ago, they were losing at home to DePaul. They were 3-8 in the conference. They were dead last. But what suddenly happened is, their defense has gone from, I think, about 189 in KenPom up to the low 120s. And during their game after surviving against Seton Hall on the road, they hold Villanova scoreless for 9 minutes in the second half. So the three-point shooting, which had killed the Musketeers in the past, it was nowhere to be found in the final 12 minutes of that one.
Yeah, David.
It has been one of the more inexplicable turnarounds, and I was looking at Xavier just throughout history. They've made three Elite Eights ever, and in two of them, believe it or not, going into the conference tournament, they were not inside the bubble and not being projected in. So maybe they're just like sneaking up on people. I don't know.
Well, we did a show probably back early January or so where we were talking about teams that may come out of nowhere to make the tournament. And I pulled out Xavier as a team I thought might turn it around. I gave up on them 2 weeks ago, though, 3 weeks ago. Yeah. I never thought they would do this. So.
Yeah,
I thought they would be the team that did it, not the way they're doing it.
Yeah, now there is still a lot of ground to cover, but the way they're playing now, I mean, they're playing like a tournament team now. Whether or not they get in because of what they've been like all year, who knows? But right now, they look like a tournament team.
Yeah, and the big games upcoming this week, we already mentioned that Marquette-Villanova game and the Xavier-St. John's game coming up Thursday. May want to keep an eye on Butler-Villanova Saturday as well. Butler, another team that's right there on the bubble by a lot of projections that I'm seeing. Let's jump over to the Big Ten, though, and Joby, let me start off with you here in the Big Ten, where we saw a Michigan State game on Sunday that I know you want to discuss, and then I'm going to go to Titel on it as well.
What an amazing job by Michigan State with multiple players out, Langford, et cetera, and holding it on the road. This is, you know, Michigan, the worry for Big Ten fans who wanted a number one seed was Michigan. It was going to have to be because of Purdue's lackluster preseason. It was going to have to be either Michigan or Michigan State. And the worry was, well, if one beats the other two out of three times, that might not be enough to propel you past an SEC champion that pops out like a Kentucky or Tennessee. Michigan State, my friends, might be able to do it if they can hold serve at home. I don't think a tournament loss to Michigan is going to knock them off, maybe. Because they'll get the regular season title. That'll mean a lot. And I think Michigan State just might be able to beat out an SEC. I mean, if Kentucky runs the table, they got it. But
yeah,
if Kentucky slips up, Michigan State is right there to snag it.
Titel, what are your thoughts on that? I know you want to discuss the Spartans as well.
So Joby discussed the injuries. Much like Florida, this is a team that dropped three in a row not too long ago, but then bounced back. Think about a team that has injured starters, plural, winning back-to-back road games at Wisconsin and at Michigan is unthinkable. It's all about Cassius Winston. He's been amazing the last four games. 23 points a game, almost 8 assists a game. Playing like the Big East player of the year, even though I don't think he's going to win it, but we'll see. If Izzo can win out, which I don't know if he can, the regular season finale against Michigan in East Lansing is going to be so big. Everybody's going to have signs with the number 600 on it. He could become the 103rd men's college coach ever with 600 career wins. And to do it at home against your arch rival, does it get any better?
Yeah, they lost to Indiana once already this year at home. They got to play them this week again. So, you know, no matter how bad Indiana's been. But David, real quick, down near the bubble in the Big Ten, Minnesota last night suffered a loss to Rutgers, to the red-hot Scarlet Knights. Is Minnie in trouble now?
Yeah. I still think that they're going to – I mean, if I had to guess, I think that it's more probable that they make it than they don't. But that was a winnable road game, probably one of their more winnable road games of the year. They didn't get it. And they only have one. And that is – you know, when you look at the history, I think Stalica or Tytel or both would know this. No one's ever gotten in. No one's ever been inside the bubble with only one. So that was one they really needed and they didn't get.
Well, they got Northwestern coming this week.
Yeah, but that's a big game. It's probably not an exciting game. It's not one of the ones that, it's going to be a billboard topper or anything. But as far as the importance, Minnie really needs that one. And if they don't get it, yeah, I think they're in real trouble.
If they don't get it, I give them no chance to win at Maryland. They got their other game is Purdue at home. I mean, Rocco, 7 and 13, that in conference, that's not going to get you in.
You wouldn't think, but I mean, the committee continues to tell us that conference record is not on the team sheet. It's not discussed. It's never a factor. So we have to take them at their word. I do think Minnesota is in trouble. I agree with you guys there, especially with the slippery slope that is the bubble cut line with all the bid thieves. I'm here at Bid Thief headquarters. So I do agree with David. They would want to pick up that Northwestern win on the road. The one at Maryland is going to be a lot tougher to obtain, and their profile just being 8-8 against the top two quadrants is shaky at best.
But let's also be clear, this isn't like Arizona State, who had a losing record in the Pac-12 last year but had mitigating circumstances because they had beaten both Kansas on the road and also Xavier on a neutral floor, where you had two wins against number one seeds last year, their best win against Wisconsin on the road, and I think Washington, that's not going to cut the mustard if you're not able to win any further games.
Well, let's jump ahead to the week's upcoming schedule. Indiana with Wisconsin and Michigan State at home, and you never know with this Indiana team whether they're going to be the team that won at Michigan State or whether they're going to be the team that has some pathetic losses at home this year.
Yeah, never know, but you're normally pretty sure they're not.
Well, the big week, the team that has a big week, we mentioned Minnesota, Ohio State has a really, really big week this week because those are two very losable games. They need the win at Iowa.
Well, they're going to lose at the buzzer to Iowa. That's the way Iowa.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, if I hadn't had a 3-2 at the buzzer,
it's really tough to go into West Lafayette when all of a sudden, yes, we know conference record doesn't matter, but it's just an indication of how you're playing. You're seeing it 17-12 at that point with four games under 500 in conference. Talk about these teams listing at that point, as I referenced with Oklahoma earlier. Ohio State will be in that category real quick if they don't take care of business against Iowa tomorrow night.
Yeah, and a really just a game Sunday's game, Michigan and Maryland. Could be a real good one there, and an important game for Michigan if they want to. I don't know that they have a shot at a one seed still, but if they win out, they might still.
Well, they got the chance at Michigan State after that, too. So if they win both those back-to-back, I think they're right back in the hunt.
Well, is that a road win exchange program?
Yeah, it would qualify, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, David, they do have to get by Nebraska Thursday night, though.
Well, they're not. But you can't hold that against them.
By the same token, would it really surprise you if Maryland beats Michigan at home but finds a way to lose at another wrecking ball in Penn State?
It would surprise me a little bit, yeah.
Let's jump over to the American Conference now, where Houston continues to pile up win after win after win. But I think we got to look below them at the other three teams here that are bubble teams. Tytel, you want to start out maybe on the bottom there with the fourth place team, Temple?
So I'm going to give a little salute to my favorite AAC coach and then scare you all with a scenario that you won't believe. So as a Penn grad, I am a huge fan of Fran Dunphy. He began his coaching career as an assistant at Army in the fall of 1971, before I was born. We fast forward almost 50 years as he finishes up his career. He could be making his 17th trip to the NCAA tourney in 27 years. Unbelievable. They had a horrible 18-point road loss at Tulsa a couple weeks ago. They've won three in a row and have 20 win seasons so far. He's doing good. They should beat Tulane, and then they got three toss-ups, Memphis, UConn, and UCF. The break-my-heart scenario is if the Owls somehow miss out on the tourney because of the worst loss on their resume, which ironically is a 7-point home loss to his former team in Penn, where he's already a member of the school's Hall of Fame. Last month is when that loss happened. My crazy scenario, let's say Temple beats Houston again in the conference tourney semis and then loses the title game to South Florida. Could we see 5 20-win American teams in the NCAA tournament?
Oh, wow.
I know.
Wow. That is – I hope Zach Singer is not watching. That's good stuff there and a good career. I've also been to 17 NCAA tournaments, although I was in the stands. How about Cincinnati? I know you were going to get to them eventually.
Well, David, you wanted to address Cincinnati? Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I mean, bloated record. They're winning the games they're supposed to win. But, I mean, they're into the rankings. I think they're going to get into the top half of the bracket. But how good are they really? I mean, they went to Houston, really, really played well. And they're just one of these teams, like a lot of the times you can look at a team's resume, if they're not under the radar anyway, and determine right away how good they really are. But with Cincinnati, if you pull it up here, and you're doing that, their best win isn't really even against anybody that's solidly in the field, I don't think.
Ole Miss,
and then they had the win. But Temple, we just got done talking about them. They're a bubble team. Where is Cincinnati's ceiling? Oh, I know where it is. It's the round of 32.
They played a round of 32 type of game again at UConn where they had a huge lead and almost blew it over the weekend.
Yeah. Well, how good is this team really? Or is Ole Miss about the range that they're in? Are they better than that and just haven't taken on any heavyweights to show it? Are they how good are they? I don't know about them. I'm curious to see what you all think of them.
Yeah, I think they're tough to compare to some of the Power League conferences that those teams get way more opportunity. But I think because the fact that they have that East Carolina loss and they can't pile up a ton of quality wins, they're going to have a limited ceiling. But they do get –
Well, I'm not talking about their seed, Rocco. I'm talking about how good are they – how good can they really play once they get out there?
They did win at Fran Dunphy's Temple team, which Houston, who is a protected seed, did not.
Yeah, and nobody's really blown them out this year. I mean, I think they're going to be a tough out for anybody once it's national tournament time.
They're going to throw a lot of rocks.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're going to lose in the round of 32.
You're probably right.
Stalica, the upcoming schedule here in the American for this week, we see here Houston has got the road trip to East Carolina, then an interesting home game against UCF on Saturday, and a game that UCF may really need here. They're another bubble team.
Well, Central Florida is going to have a 2 road test because they also go to in-state rival South Florida, which is a game that Temple, another bubble buddy of theirs, have already won. So it would behoove the Knights to win there first and not look ahead to their game at Houston.
Rocco, let's go to your team's conference here, the Pac-12 now, where Washington is now, let's see, they've got a 4-game lead. Have they clinched or one more win will clinch the outright first place in the conference? Really running away with things here.
Yeah, clinched a share. Nice sweep over the Mountain Schools at home last week. They struggled a little bit, but the team continues to play steady. steady, good basketball. But, you know, they only had to play one tournament team or close to tournament team the whole Pac-12 schedule. So, I mean, people can poke holes all they want. I'm anxious to see them get out there and play in the real tournament. But, yeah, it's been a very memorable year and still no bad losses.
Right. Well, Tytel, let me turn to you now. There is one other potential tournament team that people are projecting at the moment. And how about Arizona State, your hated rivals?
My hated – well, yes, they are. So, like, they've won three straight by double digits. So they're playing well down the stretch. And if they sweep the Oregon road trip, they're going to be 21-8. But here's my dream scenario. They come to Tucson on March 9th in the rematch of the overtime loss, regular season finale, and they lose. And their very next game is in the Pac-12 quarters because they'll get the first round bye March 14th. They play the Wildcats again, hypothetically, but it could happen based on the seeding. They end up 21-10 with losses on their resume to Andy, Princeton, and Washington State. That sounds like a number one seed in the NIT resume for me. I wonder how it would feel. That's how it would feel.
Right in the face. Right in the face.
That's good.
Joby, though, the week ahead, Arizona State with the tough road test, though, yeah. Not to mention the Oregon State trip. And Oregon State's had a little life to them this year. Maybe not a tournament team, but you know, a little bit of life here.
Yeah, no, I mean, Oregon State's going to be in the NIT. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, and as a matter of fact, there'll be a lot of Pac-12 teams there. because they have the reasonable-ish records and the reasonable-ish net, you know, around that. But Oregon State, they could trip up there. Arizona State, as Tytel pointed out, is taking care of business right now, which they desperately, with those bad losses, desperately need to. They probably can afford an Oregon or Oregon State loss. They probably can. But it's not advisable.
Well, meanwhile, we have another race to potentially watch, and that was Cal, who was actually playing with fire. They actually had a 5-point lead at Arizona State before they finally laid down in the second half. Watch their game against, well, don't watch it, but keep an eye on the result from Washington State at Cal, because lose that one and 0-18 probably in the bag.
Yeah, it was the game I was circling all year until Washington State got a little bit hot there. So I don't know that Washington State's actually going to lose that game. But if Cal's going to win a game, you're right. That's the one. Let's roll over to quickly they through won. The let's turn over to the Atlantic 10 and Joby. Let me start off with you with this VCU team on now a game up on Davidson, two up on Dayton, and the big question we've been kind of asking with them all along is this team an at-large team? Should they slip up in the A-10 tournament?
Yeah, without a doubt. Okay. With a single slip up, without a doubt. I think they have played themselves in. Their resume, pull it up, had some nice little wins. Texas, their losses besides Rhode Island, because I think College of Charleston, while it was at home, is actually a decent CAA team. I mean, I think they're leading the regular season right now in the CAA.
They're in third, actually.
But they're a decent team.
Yeah.
But they have good. You know, at Texas, good, you know, et cetera. And their bad isn't bad. And they're going to get the regular season title if they play it out. The key for them will be they avenged their earlier loss to Davidson, by just dominating the rest of their schedule in the Atlantic 10. So this team's in right now. As a matter of fact, let's talk a little eye test. Given where I live, I see them play a lot. And I like them. Their defense is strong. I mean, it is – they swarm. I'm not saying it's havoc, but they're good. Like, Virginia played them earlier. They played Virginia tough. And
They really did, yeah.
They're offensively challenged, without a doubt. You know what? Houston – at times can be offensively challenged. You know, and it's great defense they ride on. And so this is a tournament team. Is it a, you know, are they wearing white? No. But I think they can afford a single slip up. Keyword, single slip up.
Yeah, because they do have a road test at George Mason, which could be a little bit dangerous still to go before the conference tournament. But Tytel, what about the rest of the A-10 here? Is there anything we need to discuss?
Not really. So I'm just going to go quickly through it because we don't like to talk about teams with losing records in late February, for God's sakes. But when the Bonnies have won 7 of 9 and their only two losses are to Davidson and VCU, I think they're worth a quick second of our time. This is a team that won a tourney game last March. They have an X factor in Jalen Poyser. I don't know who shows up. The scoreless effort versus LaSalle on Wednesday or the game-high 20 points off the bench against the hated Fordham Rams on Saturday. This team has been decimated by injuries. Only two guys have played every single game this season. My fear, I love freshman point guard Kyle Lofton. He's played 38 minutes or more in each of the past three. I hope he doesn't collapse.
Yeah. Upcoming schedule real quick in the A-10. The two games to note, VCU hosting St. Louis at Richmond over the weekend. Mountain West. David, you want to discuss the Mountain West? I'll bring that up on the screen right now.
Absolutely. Let's discuss the Mountain West. All right, there it is.
Let's discuss what happened Wednesday night, first of all, when Nevada suffered their second loss of the season, this time inexplicably to San Diego State team that had been playing pretty lousy basketball.
Well, it was at least more understandable than the first one, getting blown out against a really bad New Mexico team. San Diego State has been lousy for most of the year, but they've kind of righted the ship a little bit. You see them climbing the standings. They're just a game really out of second place. And they're arguably one of the hotter teams in the conference, minus Nevada. They're nowhere near the bubble, not even
close. Oh, what about Air Force? The Red Heart Falcons.
Well,
Fresno beat San Jose.
You want to discuss the front rank?
They're going to be wearing white in Vegas.
Yeah, they'll be wearing...
They got a shot. It's a long shot still, but they got a shot. Well,
Air Force, if they hold serve, they'll be wearing white in the opening round of the
6-11 game. You're right. Yeah.
Against San Jose State, who, oh my God, are they putrid? Anyway. But so Nevada, I don't know.
So you're saying Air Force is looking forward to getting a bye?
Sure. I haven't thought that much about Air Force this year, to be honest. But. Yeah, they are kind of hot, but if they get a bye, they're not wearing white. Holy crap, they are kind of close.
If they play San Jose State, they're getting a bye.
Yeah, they're not. I don't see them jumping over UNLV to get it. But okay, so we have a storyline here. San Diego State, 100 miles from the tournament, but playing sort of hot right now. Utah State, who I think is on the bubble, who had to sweat a little bit against Boise State, but if you pull up their profile, at least they're winning. And then you have Nevada, who the committee gave a protected seat to during their exercise, but I think that they've since fallen from that. I've been putting Utah State in a little reluctantly, and it isn't so much that I like a whole lot on here. It's that I don't think they smell as bad as the rest of the teams on the bubble, and it is a 68-team tournament, and you do have to kind of use your imagination here. I'm not that impressed by the quad one win. St. Mary's isn't that good, but the win at Fresno, who's really good at home, and the win at UC Irvine, those two put together, I think those are two really good wins that are better than a lot of what the rest of the bubble has.
Well, let me go to Rocco real quick to address this issue of Utah State. Are you putting them in?
I'm not yet. I'm keeping them close to the cut line, but I'm really not going to commit them to the field unless they can beat Nevada this week. I don't think there's any scenario where they can get in without one win over Nevada. I just don't think they have the signature win to go along with this really nice set of power ratings. But they missed their opportunity at Houston. I watched that game. They just fell apart at the end, and they had a couple other shots that didn't work out. I think they're a quality club, and I think they're better than some of the power conference teams sitting on the bubble overall. But I don't see the committee putting them in with what they've got.
You're probably right, Rocco. But like you said, for our mock committee.
Yeah,
I think they're better than a lot of the power conference teams.
I'll be honest, I don't. I've now started to pay attention to them, and since I've started to pay attention to them, like for instance, I caught the wonderful OT Boise game, which they had no business winning. None. They should have a loss to Boise on their resume.
Yeah, right.
I don't like this team.
They got that win, but they do have a huge game title coming up against Nevada. But before that, they need to get past this red hot San Diego State team, don't they?
Yes, this is a Aztec team who was 10-8 a month ago and were dead in the water. They've won 8 of 9. They've beaten Utah State. They've beaten Nevada. They have to face both of them on the road. It's hard to find a power conference team with two harder road games to finish the season than Utah State and Nevada. even if they drop those two, they'll beat San Jose State, and they should beat Fresno at home. They'll have 20 wins entering the conference tourney. A really nice lineup. They have a veteran backcourt with a pair of seniors in Devin Watson and Jeremy Hensley. A very big front court, 6'10 twin towers, Jalen McDaniels and Nathan Mensah. My stat of the night, the Aztecs have played Nevada three times in the past 365 days. How many of those have they won?
I think all three.
All three over Nevada? Is that amazing?
They've lost to Cal twice.
Which is also amazing.
That is also amazing.
Upcoming schedule, Nevada has the rivalry game against UNLV Wednesday night, then the game at Utah State we already mentioned coming up on Saturday. But let's talk about two more teams really quickly. Let me bring you in here. I'm going to pull up on the left. We've been discussing them all season. They are still in the top 25, Buffalo. But we also have another team from outside the major conferences that has joined them in the top 25 this week, and that's the Wofford Terriers on the strength of having basically swept through their biggest, you know, all three other major competition in the Southern. They won all six of those games with their big win at Furman this weekend.
Yeah, don't be deceived that they were just moving into the top 25 because of other carnage. But as you pointed out, the hardest part of their schedule is behind them. They get a couple breathers against Chattanooga and Samford. And
wait a second. I got to take issue with there. Their home game against Samford, they won on a last-second buzzer beater in overtime. So don't write off that Samford game quite yet.
Yeah, they needed a buzzer beater to get it to overtime. It was.
I thought we were going to be segueing to your favorite shirt this season, so I had to set you up for that one at least.
Okay, but and Buffalo on the left there as well. But Joby, these two teams in the top 25, I think are in right now, even with another slip up.
Yes, definitely. I mean, and. Well, I'm glad we get to talk about Wofford a little bit because they are legit. Look at the lack of bad, but the good. Those quad one wins are legit. Furman, UNC Greensboro, and East Tennessee State may not be household names for a lot of our viewers out there, but they are good teams. They, if Wofford didn't exist, one of them would be eligible for an at-large bid. Probably because they wouldn't be getting the losses to Wofford. They'd be beating up someone else in the SoCon. This is a good overall conference. I've said it before. I'll say it again. I think at least on the top end, it's better. It's deeper in the Pac-12. And Wofford is 16-0 in it. And the losses, four tournament teams. If you think Oklahoma's a tournament team, four tournament teams, two protected seeds.
Well, Joby, let me take that another step, though. I mean, look at those scores in those four losses. They were all competitive at the final score, except for the Kansas game. But if you remember,
they were in
that Kansas game with about 6 or 7 minutes left, and they stopped scoring.
It was the under eight. It was 42-40. Now, again, the last 8 minutes did not go so well, but it was. Like, for a minute, it's like, God, they're going to take down Kansas.
Well, and this was said behind closed doors. I'll share it with the audience. Woe is the – if they are an 8 or 9, woe is the one seed who gets them in the round of 32.
Well, top 25.
Because that is not who you want.
Top 25 means – Tytel, that means 6 seed, doesn't it? But this isn't a 6 seed team in reality. This is. Do you think it's an 8-9? Is that where we got them?
They went out. I think we could talk about a top eight. As of now, I think 8-9 is right around where they are.
Right. Okay. On that note, though, let me go ahead and pull the screen share. Actually, let me leave it up here for one more second. Let's go to final thoughts. I'm going to leave it up, though, for the final thoughts because, Tytel, I'm going to start with you because we have something going on right now that's never happened before in history.
So you say that, and it's exactly true. It's usually a figure of speech. So Saturday was the first day ever with a pair of active 3,000-point scorers. Chris Clemens of Campbell, who got it done a couple weeks ago, and Mike Don of South Dakota State, who did it at home against his arch rival on Saturday. None of the previous eight guys to score 3,000 even graduated at the same time, so there's not a lot of overlap. The only two overlaps we've had was 88 when Hersey Hawkins at Bradley got 3,000 while Lionel Simmons was a sophomore at LaSalle, and then Simmons got it 3,000 a couple years later while Alfonso Ford was a freshman. So I hope everybody enjoys it because I don't think Clemens is going to make the tourney. I think Dom will, which is unfortunate only because I'd love to see them play against each other with the first guy to 50 wins the game. These are two of the greatest scorers in the history of college basketball, and they're playing at the same time. it's something that should be celebrated for a long time ahead.
And let me just mention Clemens here as well. He is about 175 points away from second all-time behind Pistol Pete. With two more regular season games, plus the Big South tourney, plus a potential postseason like the CIT or the CBI, he may have a shot at number two all-time, which will be just an amazing to finish. I don't think Dom is going to get there. He has less regular season games left, among other things.
And Bradford's slipping a little bit. So, Campbell, I wouldn't completely rule them out from winning the Big South.
Yeah, and gained the NIT off that. That's where maybe you have that matchup. It won't be in the NCAAs. But you could see it in the NIT if South Dakota State slips up in the Summit.
Which they seem to be prone to do. Yeah. Anyway, thank you for the under-the-radar thought, John.
Joby, let me stick with you, though, for any other final thoughts from you.
Yeah, no. What do teams like Boston College, Vanderbilt, Cal, Stanford, SMU, do you know what they have in common? They didn't beat the teams that are either in the bubble or right on the bubble in the last week. And that's why we should be celebrating Alabama, Central Florida, NC State, Arizona State, Clemson, because they're not messing up. And right now, I think that's, with the way the bubble is, not tripping over your own shoes by losing to Cal, Arizona State, is a way to maintain your spot in the tournament right now. It's the games we pay attention, rightfully so, to the Michigan State style games, but maybe those games that you shouldn't pay attention to naturally, like Clemson, Boston College, have as big an importance on who gets in this field as otherwise.
Good point. Rocco.
Yeah, Chad. So I'll be the first to admit I'm not nearly the biggest fan of the top 25. In fact, most weeks I don't even look at it. But very, very cool to see both Wofford and Buffalo ranked. As you know, some of us here follow those conferences very closely. And just to see the national recognition, I know it's a big deal for those programs. Also, getting ranked in the top 25 allows you to have an AP top 25 reporter following your team around for all your practices and all of your games. And you get a lot more coverage than you would if you weren't ranked. It's pretty cool for them. And beyond that, I think, I'm going to tie this back to Nevada, because in doing some analysis and trying to trace back what we learned in the last few bracket reveals that we got in early February in previous years, I think it's a really good sign that Nevada was placed at the 14 overall spot for Wofford and Buffalo specifically as well, because basically those are teams that you can't really compare a lot of data points against, except for key things like your record away from home, your non-conference strength of schedule, and obviously, taking care of business in your conference. So Buffalo, Wofford both did that. Nevada's mostly done that. Nevada and Buffalo actually have 12 wins away from their home court, which lead the nation. And I think they're all going to come out, if the bracket reveal tells us anything, feeling pretty good about where they're seated at the end of Selection Sunday.
I agree with you. Salika.
It was quite the eventful week for Georgia women's head coach Joni Taylor. Just shortly after their win against Ole Miss at home on Monday night, she goes to the hospital, gives birth to a healthy child. I believe it's her second daughter. And 48 hours later, she is right back on the bench for Georgia's win against Arkansas. That is an incredible turnaround. And
that's amazing. I saw this story, and it was just that is just flat out amazing that she's coaching 48 hours after she gave birth. That was
wow,
wild. Actually, I want to throw. You mentioned Ole Miss, and on the for those of you that may have seen it in the men's game over the weekend during the national anthem, I believe it ended up being 8 different players took a knee during national anthem in protest of what essentially was a hate group coming out to Ole Miss campus to protest the removal of some of the Confederate statues and flag and the like. And both the athletic director there at Ole Miss, as well as Kermit Davis, the head coach, came out in support of these kids and in support of the statement they made. And, it's nice to see that and to see, the right thing happening here, at least in Ole Miss. These hate groups have to go, and this nonsense has to stop. And it's nice to see, there's been a lot of talk about kneeling during the national anthem. This is one time that I 100% support what these kids did, and that's great to see the university supporting them as well.
And I think it's also noteworthy to follow up on Chad's point. When Kermit Davis actually took the Ole Miss job, I think he had gone on record saying he was going to require his players to stand for the national anthem, but this was obviously a different circumstance that he was responding to when he was wholeheartedly supporting his players in this case.
Of course, didn't the American flag beat the Confederate flag, which was,
let's
not even the
guys outside were supporting. I heard the consolation prize bracket.
But David, let me end up with you for any final thoughts.
Okay.
David's at the monitor. Okay.
Yeah, I'm at the monitor.
Okay. A few minutes.
Yeah, just give me a few more minutes. Okay, I think I'm ready here. I'm going to go to about an off-the-court issue. It's getting to that time of the year where schools have signed their players. A lot of them, you got these McDonald's All-Americans. You got these guys that are hoping that you can come in. And it's getting kind of nervous. Some of them, academically, they're where they need to be. Others, you're kind of keeping an eye on those test scores, keeping an eye on those high school transcripts and the GPAs, and making sure that you get the SATs right. I have something tonight that I think – will help people with it. I have talked to the senior director of the SAT, and there it is, I believe, on the screen. We have the answers. Now, we're running out of time. We have to go kind of quickly here.
Dave, we can't do that.
Okay, here we go. A, B, B, C, D. I mean, you just got it rolled out. I got to scroll down here. We got to go kind of quick. Sorry to be rushing through that. But here, at number 72, question, you've got to remember here, the answer to number 72 is George Mason, strength and conditioning coach, Andy Indurahan.
I guess we got to end the show like about 5 minutes ago. So on that note, on behalf of John Titel over there and Joby Fortson over there and Rocco Miller, check him out at Bracketeer.org, John Stalica, David Griggs, I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again real soon with more podcasts.